Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody. Welcome.
Brian Brushwood.
Yo, the lady who.
And that's it.
And he's, for audio listeners, he's actually wearing lederhosen. It's really right. Awesome.
It is fetching on you, Brian.
You can wear a shirt with those too, Brian. Just so, so I sent the gentleman an article a couple weeks back because I read it and I had a lot of thoughts. But I'm like, there's something very interesting here, but I'm also like, I want to get their take on it because like, I don't have a lot of the core part of it I thought was fascinating. And so the headline was, I found this on Hacker News. The guy that submitted it there is called How I Eat for Free in New York City Using Python Automation, Artificial Intelligence, and Instagram. Now, it comes across as look at this really cool technical kind of thing that I do. But I will tell you guys, like I've done enough Udemy courses now to know it's not that hard. You know, it's like I can actually say, do this course, do that course, and you could do this thing. It sounds more technical than it really is, but you know, you played as much D&D as I have, really understand human character, you know. But what he did was the dubious ethics of this, let's be very, very clear. And I wasn't like, oh, this is a great idea, everybody should do this, but I'm like, I'll bite. I'll read this and see what this is about. And so, what this guy was, he's apparently you know, he's a programmer with a lot of spare time, and he noticed that people like on Instagram and stuff could get free things. I have a friend who works for a very large entertainment company in publicity who sends me every day. Like, I got sent like last week, like, this person just asked for a free, very expensive thing, saying they'll post on social media, you know, and they're kind of laugh. And I like, well, like, you know, sometimes it works. And also, I looked at that person, I typed in that person's name into Google, and the first thing that came up was like a car crash. I'm like, I don't think they have a really good footprint. But anyhow, you know, we're the first ones to say, like, doesn't hurt to ask. So what this person did was, first they had like an Instagram account, right? And they wanted to have an Instagram account with a lot of followers. So they built a bot that would do a follow you and then unfollow. And I think it's fine to follow people to find people, but I'm not a big into just, I will unfollow you once you follow me. If you follow me and we follow each other, I'll follow you.
Right.
You know, I'll keep going. You know, if your account goes inactive or something, that might be something different. But like, I think there's nothing wrong with like, hey, a follow, we'll follow each other and do that. But to follow and then immediately unfollow once they follow you, nah, I don't want that reputation. And I think we agree.
Right. Yeah, oh, sure. 100%. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So he built, but he did an Instagram thing, which did kind of the thing, like, all because Instagram does have a limit to how many people you can follow. But he built an Instagram bot to go follow and follow to build up follows. For the content, what he did is he built an algorithm that would look for the photos that were like getting a lot of likes, photos on New York City landmarks. He built a thing about New York City landmarks. So he'd follow other Instagram accounts, and then he would take their photos. And then he would repost them. Now, he would credit them. He says he would credit them and said this photo by so-and-so. But he built a bot to get content by following other accounts and just grabbing their photos. There was no original content here. It was just a bot grabbing other people's images.
Well, and so at this point –
and apparently he says he is not doing this anymore. He's using royalty-free stock images now, apparently.
Okay. But even then, you know, he said that that the big – transformational thing was making sure to credit where this, that's not as bad as freebooting. I mean, it's like in a perfect world, you'd want permission first, but at the very least, you know, giving credit, and if anybody said, hey, knock it off, then he would immediately take stuff down.
And apparently he says people were thanking him for doing it. And I guess if you are an Instagram account of a certain size and you're posting images and people are liking it, there's probably some sort of splash effect that is net positive.
Yeah, that is the remarkable thing, and maybe this is kind of the After Things takeaway, is it's much easier to get material for Scam Nation now that it has such a reach, because now it's like, hello, you know, when Scam Nation Scam School was much smaller, It was like, hey, I'd like to teach a trick. And they're like, who are you? What is this? No, right. This sounds like trouble. Sounds like you're bringing a problem to me. But then now it's like, hey, I want to feature your trick and promote whatever you want. They're like, oh, this is not a problem. Somebody's bringing opportunity to me.
Right.
And, you know, it's tough to be in those early stages where you want to promise opportunity, but you don't have the numbers to necessarily back it up. And so, but likewise, it seems like at this point with 25,000 followers or whatever, he's over that hump to where now the fact that it's being picked and credited and driving some amount of traffic, he's providing value, arguably, mm-hmm. for everybody whose images he was scraping, even though he's not doing that anymore.
Right.
Yeah. So he would use images, repost images, totally automated. Right. And he had algorithms to figure out like what are the best images, what are not. Let's look at like comments, things like this, which things are more likely to get, you know, more people comment or like or whatever.
Yeah. One of the things is like it could detect if there was text on an image. It would also check in the comments for like if it ever said link in bio, then that usually meant that it was some sort of promotional thing. And so that mm-hmm. that he would dump, he would not use that image also. Some interesting like, I guess, semi-anthropological ways of how we use social media as a marketing tool versus a creative outlet. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting to read just to see that like how you build somebody to go through this. Then, he said that he built a machine learning model, which maybe he did, you know, to sort of figure out like what makes for a good image or whatnot to sort of predict that, you know, but based on caption, number of likes, all this other sort of stuff, which you could do. And so anyway, I built a system to sort of figure out like, how do you figure this out? How to do captioning? Because you can use web services to say what's in the photo, how to caption it. The goal was just to create a totally automated account. And then what he did once he had this whole system working where it's creating captions, it's generating content that was actually just taking other people's stuff and repurposing it for his purposes. He then what he did was, you know, he'd have to wait. He had a whole thing to how he followed, et cetera. But the whole purpose gets down to, apparently what he would do is he would send emails out to people like restaurant owners and stuff and say, hey, I have this Instagram account, blah, 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 blah. Like, look for places in the New York area. And if you can give us, you know, in exchange for a free gift card experience or whatever, you know, we'd be happy to like, you know, post or whatever or mention this.
Yeah.
And just mass email this to all these businesses in the New York City area. And to see who responded.
Yeah, apparently this is his template. Hello, account name. My name is Chris, and I run this Instagram account. We have over follower count followers in the New York City area. Blah, blah, blah. We would love to make some sort of deal with you to sponsor your establishment. We would like to post your place, address, tag your page, recommend everyone check it out. It will stay up forever. Any number of things. In exchange, I would ask for a free experience, small gift card, discount, or coupon to your place.
Which, by the way, is not a
it's easier than like normally, give normally me money.
The, yeah, normally the ask is for money,
right.
but if the ask is for free merch or whatever, yeah,
because if you give someone a discount, then there's a chance they're gonna come to your place and spend money.
Yeah, or... and also I think they all know, depending on the type of restaurant, you know, their actual expense is much lower than the perceived meal cost.
Sure.
But also they know that they're probably not gonna drive a lot of traffic as a result of it. And I almost wonder how many people say, yeah, sure, have a half price meal or something, just as, because what you don't want is them to get mad and turn that publicity engine in the negative direction where sure. It's like, oh, well, these guys didn't even want to let me taste their food.
Yeah. So he says the response are positive. And again, he's self-reporting all this, so we don't know, but I thought it was instructive because it is a great example of one person can build a system like this in there, and maybe this is not the ideal system or way to use it, but thinking outside the box or stuff. You know, you address issues, and you know, one of the things that came up was there was on a podcast, which I guess could be my pick again here, was called How I Built This, is they talked to Michael Dell, you know, and they talked to him about, you know, one of the things he did that helped him Dell computers grow, and the roots of this was he talked about when he had a newspaper route when he was a kid, and he found out that, you know, you could go to like the city hall or whatever and find out who just got a marriage license, you know, or, you know, who just moved into a house.
Oh, wow.
And those are the best people for selling newspapers to. Those are the ones that you would go to. And so he'd have friends that would just go get those records, and that's who he would make his calls to. I had a friend that was an entertainer who would have people go by the Parks and Recreation office to find out who got permits to rent those kiosks or those, the little,
like parts gazebos? Of the park.
Yeah, I think, gazebos or whatever for doing birthday parties or corporate events. Yeah. He'd find out who rented those, and then he would just cold call them and say, do you have entertainment? Do you have a bounce house? Do you have a popcorn machine? Do you have these things? And then he would just, boom, that was his source generation because, oh, there are these public records. I can go use there and do this. Michael Dell talked about we found out we could go see what the government was saying that we need to buy X number of computers. And we would go in and we'd underbid because we knew what the exact cost would be. And we would go get, all of a sudden we're selling 1,000 computers at a pop. And that's one of the things that helped build Dell,
Yeah.
And
man, when I worked at Dell, there was we would get some of those government contract callers where they it was very heartbreaking to, this anarcho-libertarian as somebody is my job is to sell a bunch of computers. And then it's like, oh, well, you could do that for $100. It's a webcam. He's like, yeah, we're going to have to spend more than that. What else you got? Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, there's a pro version for $150. They're like, would there be a benefit to buying 20 of them? And I was like, well, I guess you could give them to other people to video conference with. They're like, yeah, there you go. Let's do that.
Yeah.
And then,
and it's not to go into anarcho-libertarian things, but it's like I've heard from teachers saying, oh, we have a budget, we need to spend this by the end of the year, we got to spend this, we're going to buy these stupid things, to people who work in government, like, yeah, we got to spend X amount before the end of the year. And you're like, oh, geez, and businesses, in business, it's you're like, oh, like how much of the world is like this?
Yeah,
sure. Surplus spending.
We say this on tax day, but anyhow, you can use these things for other sorts of purposes and stuff. You go out there and data collection, things like this is an amazing sort of thing. And there's the nefarious ways people use it all the time to do this, but there are positive ways, other ways to do this. And it's just sort of you could think about the problem you have. And, one of the biggest magic retailers in the world, which, I won't name, but I suspect when they started, they used spiders to collect email addresses from anybody on a Magic forum or any place that was involved in the Magic world back in a time when people were more prone to post those. Mm-hmm. And they built basically an email list by just, a spider's just a program that you put in a web page, look for email addresses, look for any link to any other web page, go to that web page. That's how Google was built. But they were collecting email addresses. And so they built. And it's not illegal when they did it, it wasn't. And so what they did, and then those are sort of ways to think about stuff.
And also as far as the morality of this, the weird part is the novel part is that he had bots assemble it, but he started with the question, how do I get a free meal? And then step back, and the answer is, well, provide something of value besides cash. So you could do cash. Yeah. That's what you normally do. Sure. What else can you provide? What are things? So then you think of a restaurant. You're like, okay, what are all the times they ever give away a meal for free that is not paid for? And it's like, well, one, reviewers, and then, oh, social media influencers. Great. So what does it take to make a social media account that has value? We need this many followers. What is a way to get followers? Follow, unfollow, and providing content. How do you know that it's good content? Well, because you've stolen it from other people. How do you prevent them from being upset? You credit them. So weirdly, he's built an engine that does probably provide about $30 of value to each person that gives him a free meal.
And I think, he's automated this, but I think every element of this is something you could take away as something, as a means to success on social media, right? He found out you have to be posting a lot. You have to post every day. And it's not easy to post every day, which is why even if you're a person like even us, like we are a production company, we make a thing a week, but we don't have the time to, do what this guy is doing, is going out and exploring the community, which this is New Yorkers, so there's a very large community of it. But, be a part of that community, be a part of the creative element of that, using photos and using credits. But any business, you can find similar ancillary content, right? If you are a dog washing business, anything about dogs or pets, anything about washing, any household
anything in the news about those things.
Right. And then that becomes a engagement on these platforms, which is looking for pages and accounts that are very active, and it gives people something to do and something to talk about and something to rally around. And so, you know, as we are trying to do more social media stuff, that's something that I'm aware of is a vulnerability of me. Is like, I don't know a lot of magic stuff. I don't know the magic community very well.
Right.
So I can't do too much with the social media stuff, but I know that that's probably the next step in our Instagram and social and Twitter stuff.
And whether that's hiring a new human being to do that work or figuring out ways to automate, you know, because it occurs to me, like, we could set a Google News alert for the word magic and, you know, have a funny take, because magic gets used in a lot of non-magical stories, you know, like you know, the magic bullet theory or whatever. It's like you're holding the deck wrong, you know, just to have commentary on all this.
There was an episode of Veep. This week's episode of Veep had a magician candidate in the running, the presidential running, and it was
I knew a guy that used to do Google News alerts for anything magic related and follow it and write about it. I don't know what happened to him.
did he have the number one magic news site?
he's on the number one magic podcast
episode here, but Justin can tell you all about every day. Sure.
But I mean, that I'm sure that was a boon for iTrix, even, you know, in a day before algorithmic, you know, boosting of that stuff, right? iTrix was a blog, not a Facebook page.
Well, and plus also, like, how easy is that? Not that it was easy. I know that Justin put a lot of work into it, but basically, how simple is that formula of Google News alert pops up, reach out to the parties involved, ask them for comment. Now you have provided a value add to that news story. You're able to link to the original news story and have done your work, and now you have provided value.
Sure. Now, and I mean, you extrapolate this large enough and you have BuzzFeed, right? You have any number of these, you know, content farms, and that is a little bit of a distinction of, like, well, are you trying to be journalistic? Are you trying to aggregate stuff? Are you trying to collect and spread people out to different sorts of things? And that's where stuff kind of gets messy. But that stuff, there is a tension there. Maybe, you know, BuzzFeed has monetary issues right now, but it's a very popular website.
I've been talking about the issues that BuzzFeed is facing for years. When, you know, you realize that their total ad revenue, and this was like 3 years ago, was like $40 million, which sounds on one hand like a lot, but on the other hand, it's not. And that's been the problem. And I've said that that's not a thing that's really going to grow, because Brian just illustrated, you know, a vision that we may be experiencing right now or very close to, which is it's one thing to say, hey, this is trending, we'll repost this. It's another thing to generate that email that goes to you and says, hey, do you have a comment on this? And you're never even talking to a reporter. It's just a computer that says, we went to Brian Brushwood and Brian said, you know, monkey balls, and that's, you know, doesn't know to not repeat that, but it gives you that comment. Or, hey, hop on the phone and we'll have the Google Voice thing interview you. And we're here. There's close to form. I mean, we already have forms of that where it's not just reposting, but it's generating new content by going to original sources and stuff. And that's, you know, that's thing to think about. It's like, hey, is that Instagram thing you're following? You know, we know they're bot accounts, but, like, you know, is the reporter you follow? We know that they're using it for sports scores and stuff, but hell, there's a lot of repetitive stuff in reporting. Like you pointed out, like, get a comment, get this from somebody. And no job is safe, guys. No job is safe.
Yeah, man.
Man, I can even see a value add where it's like you have the main feed for the article, and then maybe you have like a Twitter feed that claims early access to stories as they're developing. And in exchange for raw data of these computer-generated news stories, they get feedback on whether or not somebody says something interesting, like a pull quote from it. And then based on that, they're able to shape the story, and they're like, oh, wow, the response on this is huge. This is one that could go big.
Yeah.
You know, and you take that, and first I'd be like, well, who's the audience? I'm like, oh, financial journalism, you know, things like that. You know, you think about, like, you know, if you're, you know, somebody who's analyzing stocks and stuff like this, if you had a financial system that, you know, such and such company said this, like, okay, the bot's going to go reach out to that person, get a statement from that person about it, and now we're going to have a clarified thing. You know, you could follow, you know, the first generation of tools that are going to be really impactful are going to be the ones that magnify, you know. So one reporter could say, oh, I'm covering 20 stories. I've got bots that will do it. I read the response, say, oh, yeah, that's a good comment. Use this. No, they just told me to F off. We won't use that. But Yeah. Future scary.
This is going to be my pick ahead of time, but a lot of the social media stuff I pulled from a talk from, when was this? Was this this year? Earlier this year, or maybe last year, that actually a friend, our friend Veronica Belmont was giving about social media. She's a project manager on Adobe Spark, which is a social media content generation machine, right? You put in your branding stuff and it spits out JPEGs and quotes and videos and stuff. But the beginning of this talk, before they really get into the actual tool of like walking through how the thing works, is a really interesting sort of exercise on, like, you know, opening your mind on what social media can do for your business in terms of not just the things that you directly make, but all of the things around you to build an audience, so that you are more than the thing that you make. You are blending into the community that you are trying to assimilate into, you know, taking advantage of social media in that way. So I'll have a link in the show notes, but it's a really good talk, especially just this beginning part, if that's really what you're looking for. But also their tool looks cool too. So
very cool. Yeah, it's sick to hear, like, what if we had a robot co-host that, you know, because, like, often, you know, we're talking about things that's over our heads and stuff, and we're kind of left going, I guess, I don't know. But to be able to have a resource that could tell us.
I think that would be like a novel stunt in the short term, and it wouldn't be all that hard to do, because it could just listen and translate our discussion and figure out, especially, let's say you had a news related thing, it could throw up ideas and just says, hey guys, have you thought about this take, or generate pull quotes, or it would be fun and funny comments. At first for stuff it gets wrong, right?
Yeah.
But think about this. What if there was, so let's assume in general we have a solid audience of people who are on our side, and what if the co-host was entirely from the audience, and everybody is you know, making their comments, and then Reddit style, sure. People are like, yeah, oh no, that is a good point, and then it takes that sentence and then, you know, waits for an organic pause, and then says that exact line.
Sure, yeah, I'm like, Reddit especially, it would kind of be a very perfect thing for some of the, you know, automated or not, right? Like, it pulls the news stories that its user base provides the commentary. And so, you know, not only your natural reaction to stuff, but also like, hey, this is, you know, the big thing people are responding to. What do you think about that?
It's so weird how powerful that social proof is, because I will, before I read, as with many articles, you get the gist of it just from the headline, and you don't need to read the article. And instead, I'm interested in what the hottest takes are on Reddit. So it's like, I'll jump there and just read the first few lines and maybe scroll down and see whatever was second of the counter take usually.
Yeah, I do that with Hacker News. Like, often I'll like, oh, interesting, but let me go read what the top takes are, because maybe it's something I don't quite understand, and I want to hear, you know, generally, you know, there's going to be somebody really smart there who's going to break it down a little bit. And they're like, oh, now I have a context, now I'll go read it, you know.
Or so, as a means of verifying news, right? Being like, okay, yeah, well, this is true, but also in context, title, this is not very actually important or whatever.
Right. They've been doing this for years. Take a look at this, and the other thing.
Sure. So something like that, too. You know, I was always surprised Reddit kind of never did any sort of content play about that.
I think Reddit is learned from the lesson of Dig, and just they're all like, not too ambitious, boys. We're just going to ride this wave. Yeah. Making big changes, and it didn't go over well at the old place. That's sure. Why we got this place.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, and that's the Reddit has this great crowd that self-organizes and figures stuff out. And anytime you want to have some sort of central fact checker or something like that, it's going to fail. You're always going to be scaling faster than your fact checking department can handle things.
Which by the way, we saw, like, during the Boston bomber massacre, it was one of the most shameful chapters in Reddit's history, where their excitement to solve the crime outpaced their responsibility or ability to fact check, and they sure. It was an awful mob disaster. It was really horrific.
And that's a great case where it's like, you get a handful of people that decide, oh, you know, because, like, you know, we get back to the study of critical thinking, but it's like, you read a newspaper article, so-and-so accused of this. somebody tells you, you hear about the person who did blank, and you're like, wait, we lost the word accused here. You know, accused, and people often in the regular speech, because it's like we talk about how more efficient communication is like, well, let me condense this because I assume they must have done it if they got accused. Like, maybe, but there's a large times they don't. And, you know, the Boston bomber case, it's like, let's catch the guy. Like, this is the person. Like, okay. Hey, this looks like this person here. And mm-hmm. And it's like, that's different. And if people knew that's what you're saying, maybe they wouldn't have gleefully, you know.
And that's going to be a weakness of algorithmic based or user voted based content, full stop. I mean, yep. You know, in a world where any social network wants to promote stuff that's the most engaging, it's going to be the stuff that is the most controversial or the most counter to incite a debate, whether or not the facts, you know, justify debates or that much exposure. You know, the machine doesn't know and it doesn't care.
You know, we're starting to go into weird things territory here, but oops, like I'm thinking about bots that like a fact check bot. Like imagine somebody says something and immediately a fact check bot pops in and says, hey, this is an often misquoted thing. I'm a bot, but it looks like you're pushing something that's been proven no longer true. And I think, oh, wow, that would really have value. But then I think about
and Reddit is lousy with bots.
Yes, there are a lot. But
oh, did you notice you misspelled there? Did you actually notice that you're a bad bot? Like there's a thing on Reddit now where the bots will have keywords that will trigger other bots, and they will make these recursive threads, and it's a pain.
It's funny the first time you see it, and then that's it. But I think about in an age where we are increasingly valuing truth, and it becomes increasingly possible to fundamentally distort worldviews. There was somebody who was selling a get rich scheme, similar to like The Secret. That's basically just wish for money and you'll have it. Mm-hmm. And he had this thing where it's like, come pay me $5,000 and drive around in my $150,000 Rolls Royce, and we'll mind vision scheme, and you'll become rich later.
Sounds like a steal.
Around the time I was like, Jesus, what is happening? When you Googled this person, it would autocomplete scam, and there was a lot of upset people that really didn't like it. And then one day, suddenly all that was gone.
Sure.
Suddenly the word scam is gone, doesn't show up as an autocomplete, can't even find. All of his ratings went from half a star on Amazon to 3.5 to 4 stars. And it was like in the space of a year. And it's like this dude shaped reality. He rewrote the truth.
I mean, there are entire firms dedicated to this emergency PR stuff. And you hear them talk about it, and it sounds very easy. You just have to flood Google or any other thing with anything else. Right.
Yeah.
And that ends up being what a lot of it is like literally flood it with all these networks of blog rolls or what have you until that stuff is erased or diffused.
But, you know, I'll say the contrary point is that we don't know that the first version was the total. Like maybe he had one disgruntled guy who said, I'm going to make sure this guy scale. I'm going to build a 500 web pages that scale. And that's the problem, of course, because like you go to these fact checking sites and you go, no, you shaded that. You gave this half true, but it's completely false. But because politically it's in line with where you are, you know, you had a problem where like there was a large organization in a Southern something, organization for making people aware of like, you know, racial issues and stuff, heavily funded, extremely well funded. Maybe the largest company in the world even helped back them because they wanted to show they're right. And then you find out that like, they'll say, oh, there's a rise in these incidences. And like, no, like they're taking five different parts of one organization to list them as five separate, or all these other things. They manufactured data to support their cause, and they were considered a source of truth, and they're not. And you know, it's that, you know, I don't know. It's frustrating because it's like, yeah, we'd like to have this thing that could say, oh, no, actually, but it's like, who programs the no actually? And Facebook hasn't been able to do it. Google hasn't been able to do it because it's hard.
Social media company or social network companies, excuse me, don't have any incentive to stop any of that. They don't have an incentive to deal with objective truth. They want engagement, and that kind of goes counter to the idea of
they're trying hard. Like Facebook's trying hard now because they're the scrutiny on them. Like they've been, they work out agreements with different journalistic groups to sort of figure out to rate the truthiness of an article because they want to show that they're making an effort to do this, but they're finding out that you kind of can't because you're basically saying, oh, well, we found this source here that said this, so therefore it's true. But yeah, that source misquoted it or this or that. Or it this has context that goes beyond what we, you know, perceive. So we're doomed. We're doomed.
yeah,
I thought it was interesting. Was like, I like to go to like the blog Electric, like Electric Tech, which is like, you know, a blog about like Tesla and other electrical stuff. And I agree with a lot of what they say, but a lot of stuff I think they're wrong. But anyway, I enjoy reading it. And they do a thing called Electric's Take. They'll have an article, then they'll say, here's our take on this. And I read on a Reddit forum where people are like, no, I don't like it because that's biased. And I'm like, you know, I thought it was kind of idiotic because it's like that writer had that bias.
Right.
They're now telling you, hey, this is my point of view on it. And it was weird. They thought that once they said pull back the curtain, like, here's what I think is going on, that some people are upset, like, yeah, that seems very biased. It's like, what, you didn't know that a human wrote this that had their own thoughts on this?
So. Yeah, and I feel like that's something that just more people need to be educated. Something that academia has known for years is that it's very important to recognize your own biases and the biases of the people whose work you read. And as a result, once you know that, it becomes more powerful. If somebody, let's say, who skews very libertarian, writes an article with a conclusion that is uncomfortable for his thesis and says that, then you know to value that higher because it's something that is counter to their bias. That's the way religious scholars have had to figure out which gospels copied from which other gospels and which things very likely the historical Jesus did and did not do, because like basically if there's
you keep translating like, it enough and there's enough humans involved,
right? Yeah. And it's like it's basically the weird stuff, like he probably definitely cursed out a fig tree at some point because that was the most un-Jesus
sometimes
thing to
do. A fig tree really has it coming though sometimes,
right?
They drop a fig on your cart and you're just trying to get to the market.
Yeah, we're doomed. All right.
I mean, look, we're just going to morph into AI, beautiful, eternal sky children.
No, they're gonna annihilate us.
You both made a pick.
Oh, yeah, we did.
You know what? I'll give a lighthearted pick.
Sure.
I saw a Missing Link. It was adorable.
What is this, a film?
It's a stop-motion animation movie with Zach Galifianakis as Sasquatch.
Yeah, the Sasquatch film.
Yeah. Oh, also, how did we go a whole day without talking about the SpaceX launch? and the fact
God.
That for the second time they landed, for the first time ever, they landed
boosters.
All three boosters.
Yeah.
It slipped our minds. Oops. That's how low it ranks now on the impressiveness. Also, plane landed safely. But it was anyway, Missing Link, I was...
Is this good? I was very skeptical at the trailer.
I was too, because it reminded me too much of Early Man, which was bad, and I didn't like Early Man at all. But Missing Link was adorable and fun, and it was... I realized, like, man, there's something I'm getting here that I've not gotten in a long time. What is it? And I realized it was the representation of the English-British gentleman... without any chastising or putting into context like their racial imperialist empire or whatever. It was just a romanticized Victorian era representation of adventurers' clubs and the desire to see the world and all that stuff. It was great. It was positive and cheerful, and I enjoyed it.
Cool. Good for kids?
Great. Really enjoyed it with the kids.
Awesome.
Also, my kids did not like The Prestige because the birds died. Oh. And they were not getting past that. even at the end, they're clearly blown away by the end, but they're all like, "Dad, but that bird, this, why are you showing me this garbage?"
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah, forget the humans that died. Yeah,
birds are very smart.
Cool, very cool. Yeah, my pick, I'm going to say again, is How I Built This. The podcast, I think, is really good. Really, a lot of cool episodes on there. So,
you know, what's funny is I added it to my subscription thing on the recommendation of my trainer, And I have a whole bunch of episodes. I never made it over that hump to really give it a try. So I think your recommendation comes at the right time. Is there a particular episode I should start with?
Yeah, like I'm a big believer in like I don't listen to every episode of a podcast. I'll just download specific episodes. So like the Squarespace one I thought was pretty good. Let me see what else was on there that I enjoyed. But
you were talking about
the
lot.
Dyson one.
Yeah, you were talking about the Dyson one also.
Yeah. Dyson one was good. What else I listened to?
There's a lot of big name companies here too.
What's that?
There's a lot of big name companies here too. Like
Nolan Bushnell. Oh, okay. And the reason I really emphasized Nolan Bushnell was those of you that don't know, Nolan Bushnell created a little company called Atari. Mm. And then a little one called Chuck E. Cheese. His way of thinking, what's that?
I did not know they were that was the same person.
Well, you were born after the time, so you know he was sort of in a way like our new Walt Disney, you know, in a way, mm-hmm. you know. But he goes through like the thought process behind these things, you know, the thought process behind it. And a lot of it involves how do you get people to put quarters inside of a machine, you know, and there's the evolution of Chuck E. Cheese is pretty interesting, you know, about you know it's going to be Coyote Pizza. And he found out that he didn't buy a coyote costume. It was a rat costume.
That's the only reason.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Marketing people were like, no, we need to rethink this. But he's I've met him. He's a super cool guy, too. And he's a guy that's just like, anyhow, I just highly recommend that just to see where did that come from, whatever. And they're small. They're like 35 minutes, whatever. So.
Cool.
Groovy. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.